ride into the weekend. That's a good thing. The weather's supposed to warm up. That's another good thing. We're going to talk with Amy Harden in just a couple minutes. That's a good thing. Ann Lepsey is going to join us at 3:45. And, of course, the Big Kahuna at Loaves and Fishes. And the food pantries finally getting their arms around exactly what it's going to be like after the food stamp cuts that went into effect last Friday. At 4:10, we're going to talk about bats. There is a problem for bats, white nose syndrome, it's called. It's a fungal problem, and it is killing millions of bats. Are we looking at an extinction-level event, this white nose syndrome? We'll find out when Rob Mize joins us at 4:10. And yesterday, when I was talking with Josh Israel from Think Progress, I proposed that there are parallels between what happened in Virginia and Michigan. We are states where the conservatives gerrymandered the districts to ensure having a Republican House and Senate and governor, and yet they elected a Democrat, and sort of a historic event. And Josh and I sort of agreed that there are parallels. Well, I thought we'd give that a reality check this afternoon, because at 4:40 we're going to talk with Mark Schauer, the Democratic candidate for the governor's seat. And we'll see what he thinks of my hypothesis that there are direct parallels between what happened in Virginia and an election that's now less than a year away. But first, let's get Amy on. Amy Harden, how are you?
I am just fine this afternoon. And you, Roger?
Oh, I'm fat and sassy. first, we need to say that you're the author of Democracy-Tree, one of my all-time favorite blogs. And we appear to be attacking the judicial system in our state.
Yes, that is what is happening, and we discussed last week this problem as it was becoming apparent to us. And I have to apologize. I have construction going on at my house, so you might hear some power saws and hammers and things in the background.
Okay.
Senate Bill 652 snuck up on us last week, and the purpose of that is to transfer the powers of the Court of Claims from Ingham County to the Court of Appeals in Michigan. And the Court of Claims handles suits against the state of Michigan for things that maybe the governor or the legislature has done when people want to sue, for example, over the emergency manager law would be one of them. And they also handle cases for FOIAs, Freedom of Information Act, Open Meetings Act, things of that nature, plus suits against individual state employees. So this is all being moved to the Court of Appeals. Oh, it is getting noisy here.
Yes.
I told my contractors to be quiet during this time, but apparently they didn't listen to me.
Yeah. Contractors never do listen.
True.
If you call them, they don't return your calls. I mean, they're just out there doing their own thing. What are the conservatives, the Republicans, hoping to accomplish by this move?
Well, moving it to the Court of Appeals, what that has done is they've created a situation where the Supreme Court, which is heavily leaning right, has the power to appoint the judges from the Court of Appeals to hear these cases rather than having them go through the system they've gone through all along under all the other governors, where it's these cases, the majority of them are heard in Ingham County. And the speculation here is that in addition to challenges to the emergency manager law that are pending right now and challenges to right to work also, for example, union activist Robert Davis, he's been suing the state for records about the appointment of the Detroit emergency manager, Kevin Orr, whether the entire process was predetermined, premeditated, and figured out, you know, in advance, not in accordance with the emergency manager law. And the other thing this Davis fellow is poking into is he's trying to find out the names of the anonymous donors to Snyder's Nerd Fund, that nonprofit that he just dissolved about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to find out who gave money to that particular fund. So it looks like the GOP lawmakers, they are trying to create a situation where judges that are friendly to their cause will be hearing these cases and dismissing them and just not giving them a fair shake.
Well, seeing we're now going to start these cases at an appeals court, the title of that court infers there was an action of some other court that's being appealed. Are there any constitutional problems with what the Republicans are attempting to do here?
Yes. First off, it's unconstitutional for the legislature to enact, to expand the powers of a limited court, and the appeals court is constitutionally a limited court. They cannot do that without a two-thirds vote, and this law passed the House yesterday by 57 to 52. That's not two-thirds. So that's problematic, that it's unconstitutional from the get-go. And the other problem with the Court of Appeals, the judges there probably aren't really happy about this situation themselves, because they're not a fact-finding court. They're not a primary court. They just look at cases that have already been argued, and they look at those arguments and make decisions based on that. So they don't know how to do, they're not trial judges. They don't know how to do this. So what this law has created is something called special masters. And these special masters are people that are going to come in and do all this legwork for the judges. And the Court of Appeals does not meet that often. So, you know, the bulk of these cases, you know, shifting over to them is going to make them unhappy, because their dockets are going to be very, very full. Because current cases, not just future cases, but those that are pending and already in the pipeline, are going to be shifted over to them. So they're going to have to start from square one on those cases and you know, start retrying them. It's a very expensive and time-consuming proposition, this particular law. So there's a reason why the judiciary hasn't weighed in on it. They're probably looking at it thinking, this is not a good idea.
Yeah. You gave us the real reasons that conservatives would be heading down this road. What are they saying is their reason? They're not being candid and saying this is to try to manage the FOIA requests and lawsuits and have them assign who they want to hear the case. What kind of rationale are they putting forward for why they want this change?
They are saying that they're trying to give a broader base of judges across the state as opposed to just Ingham County. Now, Ingham County is what they specialize in. This is what they do. That's where Lansing is. That's why most of these cases go through there, because the lawmakers and the governor's office and these public officials work in Lansing, so that's why they have jurisdiction from the beginning. Now, Governor Snyder, he's already indicated that he's clearly going to sign this, and he was quoted as saying he believes it's a good piece of legislation because it's about broadening the base of having judges that will represent all of Michigan. And then he went on to say, quote, "I just try to do the right thing, and politics are politics." So he certainly knows it's politics. But Representative Sam Singh, who he was on the floor yesterday along with quite a few Democrats arguing against this quite vehemently, and he actually referred to what the GOP is doing as jamming it through.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was they jammed it through the House Government Operations Committee. They bypassed the Judiciary Committee, where it would have given some, you know, heavy consideration to all the ramifications of this law. And there are many, many that were not even considered or discussed by the GOP at all. And the feeling on the House floor from all the comments was that many of these lawmakers that voted for it didn't even read it or understand it.
When would you estimate this will hit the governor's desk? What kind of a timeline are we on?
Probably as fast as possible, because they ramrodded this through the Senate and through the House within just a matter of, you know, whatever, 10 days or less. So I imagine it's going to hit the governor's desk and it'll be signed into law immediately. And they also gave it immediate effect, which is another thing where they violated the Constitution. Immediate effect requires the two-thirds vote, just like even changing the judiciary requires a two-thirds vote.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have that. And I saw some video this morning that I have been unable to find again, where Representative David Rutledge was on the floor asking for the two-thirds vote, and he was just gaveled away and said, you know, forget it, and really just shut right up.
Hmm. And when will the appeals of this being unconstitutional begin?
Oh, I'm going to guess immediately. There are probably quite a few parties that want to appeal it. What will be interesting is to see where they try to appeal it, because to appeal it, what they would do is they would have to sue the state of Michigan, and would they be forced to do it through this new process, through this law, so that the Court of Appeals would have to decide whether they're a legitimate body, whether they have jurisdiction or not, or could they do it through Ingham County and just thumb their nose at this particular piece of legislation, this law, and see what happens there, and then move it on to the Court of Appeals. Either way, it'll end up in the High Court. It's going to be before, yeah, Robert Young and his friends are going to be deciding this, as that is one of the other things that Robert Young will probably be the person that it defaults to him decide, choosing the judges that will hear these cases from the Court of Appeals. Because if you think about it, the Supreme Court's not in session a lot. They're a very busy body, a very august body, and they don't really have the time or inclination to want to sit down and choose four judges for every case. So it's probably just going to be him by fiat choosing them.
Hmm. And we call it democracy.
Yes, yes, we do.
Yeah. So tell me who the groups that you think will want to challenge this law. Give me a flavor for the groups who will be most concerned.
I'm thinking the same people that are concerned about the emergency manager law and right to work.
Okay.
Those are the two biggest challengers right now that are in Ingham County. And there are many other smaller ones. But we'll probably see, just like with those particular cases, coalition building and a lot of energy put into the challenge. It'll probably come fairly rapidly because they've been, I'm sure, scrambling. Their legal teams have been scrambling, figuring out what to do with this.
Okay. Democracy Tree, I forget the hyphen.
Democracy-dash in the symbol,
yes.
Yeah, hyphen, .com. And from my website, you can find me on Facebook and on Twitter.
And always good reading, and appreciate your taking the time to talk with us this afternoon.
Well, thank you, Roger. It's my pleasure.
Have a good one.
You too.
And have fun with the construction.
Thank you.
Don't call asking for money or anything.
No, I won't do that.
Okay. Amy Harden, the author of one of my favorite blogs, Democracy Tree. You'll have to remember to put the hyphen in. 44 degrees. It is chilly out. We're going to get a complete update of the AccuWeather forecast for the evening. coming up in just, 15 minutes, right here on 590 WKZO. Degrees on the outside. Roger and Michael riding home with you this afternoon. How's Michael doing?
I'm doing pretty well today.
You sure?
I was watching one of my TV shows last night of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on Hulu because I didn't get to catch it on Tuesday, and I almost cried during that show. I'm going to admit it. one of the characters almost died last night, and I would have been pretty shaken up if she did.
What show is this?
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's on ABC at 8 o'clock on Tuesdays. It's kind of like a spinoff from the Avengers movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Is it new this year?
Yeah, this is the first year it's been on.
Oh, and you're already that engaged in it.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, you are a sensitive young man.
I am.
Yeah. Hey, weather is brought to you by Bronson Vicksburg Outpatient Center, offering emergency care and lab work 24/7. Learn more at bronsonhealth.com. The weather forecast, brisk and chilly this afternoon, clouds and some sun, rain or snow shower around. I haven't seen either of those today.
I haven't either.
Yeah. Some clouds and cold the rest of the night, a low 32. Sun and clouds, quite chilly tomorrow, 46 the high. Saturday, a little warm up, partly sunny, breezy, and 55. Again, we have 44 in Kalamazoo. Coming up at, right after Bob Larson, Ann Lipsey's going to join us. As we all know, the budget for feeding hungry kids, feeding hungry people, over half of which are kids, was cut last Friday. And food pantries, like Loaves and Fishes, are just now beginning to get their arms around the impact that those cuts are going to have. And let's just say it's safe to assume it's not going to reduce people coming through their door looking for food. At 4:10, we're going to talk with Rob Mize. He's from the Organization for Bat Conservation, and he's going to talk to us about white nose syndrome. And interestingly enough, Michigan bats have not been hit hard by this disease yet. We're sort of a donut hole. It started on the East Coast, but now Minnesota and Wisconsin are seeing bat die-offs from this disease. And yet we haven't seen it yet in Michigan. And we'll talk to Rob if he knows any reason why and when this will all come to a screeching halt. We'll find out, is this going to be an extinction-level event for bats? They're one of nature's insect management team, and they actually work all night when some of the really obnoxious insects are out, say mosquitoes. And so if all our bats disappear, we're going to miss them. And then finally at 4:40, we're going to talk with Mark Schauer. We're going to see if he sees any comparison, any relationship between what happened in Virginia during their election on Tuesday and what might happen in Michigan coming up in a little less than a year. All that right here on 590 WKZO. Just one more. 640 at 590 WKZO. Roger and Michael in the car with you on the way home from work or wherever you've been today. Coming up in, well, any minute, we're going to talk to AccuWeather meteorologist Bob Larson, and he's going to give us the latest updated weather forecast for Kalamazoo. Are we actually going to see any of the lake effect showers or snow showers? Don't know. And we're going to find out when he calls here in just a minute or so. And then right after that, I'm going to talk to a woman that is an integral part of the safety net for the city, for Kalamazoo, for the Kalamazoo area. And Ann Lipsey, the director of Loaves and Fishes, will join us. But first, Bob, are we going to see any of that snow?
Give me a time period here.
Oh, between now and, say, April.
Okay. It makes it easier.
Yeah.
No, actually, I wasn't sure if you're referring to, like, what might happen this afternoon and evening or what might be happening next week when it gets very cold.
Oh, so it's
kind of a two-part question.
Oh, I didn't know there was a second part to the question.
Well, yeah, the idea. Remember we talked yesterday about how cold it would be getting next week, and you said, would there be snow with that, I assume, and I said maybe not because it looks like a northeast wind and so on and so forth. That still appears to be the case. I believe it will become very cold next week, the coldest weather of the fall so far. But probably not much in the way of snow for that. Maybe a few flurries, but I wouldn't expect much in the way of snowfall. And in terms of today, in the short term, I think we pretty much missed our chance at this point, so I don't believe we'll see any. So to answer your question, no.
Oh, okay. I can't tell you how much rain we got yesterday because my wife did me a favor. She took down my rain gauge because it's glass and because you threatened really cold today.
Right, it would crack the glass.
Yeah, she was trying to protect me. So last I looked, we had about 3/4 of an inch.
Okay, the official tally ended up being 0.59.
Oh, well, so we're in the ballpark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what is the word for today?
The word is prelude, because the chilly weather we have in place now is merely a prelude of what is to come for next week, as it gets very, very cold next week. And by very cold, keep in mind, I mean very cold for the first half of November, not cold January style. But we're going to be talking about daytime highs in the 30s. In fact, maybe either Tuesday or Wednesday, tough to say which is the coldest at this point. Actually, all 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. All three of those days will probably be highs in the 30s, and at least one of those may be a struggle to get the high temperature much above the freezing mark. So obviously we haven't anything along those lines yet so far this autumn season, so that would be cold. Nighttime lows with some cloud cover may not be exceptionally cold, but certainly they'll be well down into the 20s. If it were to be clear for a while and able to clear out, we could be looking at nighttime lows in the teens.
Ooh, that is bracing.
Right. Right now, I suspect it's lows in the 20s, though.
Okay, we'll go with that.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Sounds a little more tolerable.
So if we did get any snow flurries, they might actually linger during that period.
Absolutely. It would certainly be colder than supported. What the long-range computer models are showing right now, though, that out of all this cold next week evolves a storm that would affect the East Coast, not the Great Lakes region. It could evolve into some sort of nor'easter, which could be fun and games for that, for the folks there, but not back here.
Is there anything in the Gulf that would come up the East Coast?
No, it's something that would try to develop over the southeastern U.S. and then come up the East Coast, not so much a storm coming up out of the Gulf.
Okay. Okay.
Now, one thing, I'm going to abruptly change gears here. I thought it was worth mentioning this because just meteorologically speaking, it is significant, and that is the super typhoon that is in the western Pacific right now. And it's not just meteorologically significant. This is going to, it's actually headed directly toward the Philippines, and this is going to unfortunately wreak havoc there. It is the strongest, by way of barometric pressure, it is the most intense storm anywhere that we've seen in the world so far this year. That
okay.
includes hurricanes, which, as we know, there haven't been many hurricanes. It includes all other typhoons, and includes any other low-pressure areas. The central pressure of this typhoon, known actually a super typhoon right now, It's Haiyan, by the way, Super Typhoon Haiyan. Okay. 895 millibars, to translate that, that is 26.43 inches of mercury. Take a look at your home barometer if you have one, and just look on the dial at what 26.43 is, if it even goes that far down.
It doesn't.
The scale.
Yeah.
That is
low.
Extremely powerful. Not any kind of a world record, but actually fairly close. I had to look this up. The world record low pressure was from Super Typhoon Tip in 1979, and that was a pressure of 25.69. This is a 26.43.
Now, hurricanes and typhoons are really the same kind.
They are the same.
What is a super typhoon?
A super typhoon is what we call a major hurricane. We have the classification system categories 1 to 5.
Yeah.
And anything 3 or above is considered a major hurricane.
Uh-huh.
A super typhoon would be anything category 3 or above.
Oh, okay.
But nonetheless, a typhoon, not a hurricane. And they just refer to them as typhoons in the Western Pacific, but they're the very same type storm.
And so calling it a super typhoon, we could possibly see an Atlantic hurricane the same strength as a super typhoon. There's nothing peculiar about hurricanes that happen in the Pacific that make them stronger.
In a way, yes and no, I'd say that. Traditionally, the deepest, most intense, and lowest pressures we find come from super typhoons in the Western Pacific. On average, that's where we find the worst. And I think it has to do with just the fact that the Pacific is larger, and there's more tropical waters for these things to grow larger, whereas in the Atlantic, before they can get too intense, they tend to bump into land,
okay,
and that disrupts them. So traditionally, the deepest storms we have found on Earth seem to be in the Western Pacific. This typhoon I talked about, Tip, in 1979 was another Western Pacific storm. And looking at the bottom five lowest pressures ever recorded, I think four of the five were over the Western Pacific.
Oh, okay. Okay. Boy, you are just a wealth of important weather trivia.
And aside from the trivia, I mean, this is a serious situation for folks in the Philippines. This is a very dangerous storm. And if we were to characterize it, it's not just above a 3, it is flat at a Category 5, about as strong as it gets,
yeah,
and it's coming right toward them.
It's going to be a humanitarian disaster, quite
unfortunately.
Likely. Yeah. Well, I guess on that note,
we put things into perspective, makes our breezy, chilly weather a little easier to take.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain. Tomorrow, don't forget.
Oh, it's Geek Friday.
Yeah, yeah.
We have all the stats, and we'll have the first week of November to look at. Overall, weather-wise, tomorrow should be a better day in the sense it'll be less wind and there'll be some sunshine. And while it will still be chilly, it all in all should be a better, brighter day.
Yeah. And just so you know, the only reason I work on Fridays is to get to Geek Friday.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. That's it. Yeah.
I'd be taking a long weekend if it weren't for you and Geek Friday.
Wouldn't want to miss that, huh?
Nuh-uh. Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome, Roger.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
AccuWeather meteorologist Bob Larson. And it does seem the Philippines have a target painted on them. Not a pretty picture. Joining us now with not a pretty picture locally, I'm afraid. We'll find out if the picture has gotten ugly since last Friday. Joining us now from Loaves and Fishes, the world-famous Ann Lipsey. Hi, Ann. How you doing?
Hey, Roger. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Do we have our arms around just how dramatic the increase in business is going to be based on the SNAP or food stamp cuts last week?
Well, I think what I can tell you is that we are definitely hearing both from clients and from caseworkers that those cuts have happened and that people are seeing those cuts. So what Deb was saying from the call center today was she heard, I was cut $30, I was cut $50, not sure what to do. And so I think that we are seeing a growing number of people for whom the food situation was already precarious, and today is more precarious than it was a week ago.
Yeah.
Because they just don't have the same number of dollars. My understanding is that on average, food stamp assistance went from about $1.50 a meal per person to $1.40 a meal per person. And while it doesn't seem like a lot, I think if we think about our McDonald's meal, it is a lot. It's not one that's it's not a cut that can be absorbed easily.
Well, and the price of food has rises with the cost of production, and so a cut is not only not keeping up with increases in the cost of food, it's actually moving in the wrong direction.
Exactly.
Congress didn't pick on the area served by loaves and fishes when cutting the SNAP program. Do you have feedback from other pantries, what they're seeing, and are you seeing any really creative ways of dealing with the situation?
Well, I did have an opportunity today to visit the Food Bank of South Central Michigan and to hear from Lisa Davis, who is from Feeding America, which is the national, largest national domestic hunger relief organization.
Okay.
We get a significant amount of our food from them, and that Feeding America represents 203 food banks across the country. We're a food pantry system, but we get part of our food supply from there. I think what Lisa was saying was that what they're seeing is across the country, we've got 37 million people that the charitable system is trying to help support. We're seeing those folks more frequently, and that for many of them, the economic recession hasn't shifted into good times for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that that is isolated. I don't think that there's anything that as a charitable system we can just turn a knob and all of a sudden things are significantly different.
Mm-hmm.
I live in fear because if the kinds of cuts that we're experiencing this month are carried into the future with additional cuts, I think things are going to be very bad for a lot of families.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those people that are on food stamps today are kids.
Mm-hmm.
They're community seniors. They're people who are disabled. So, and many of the households have one or more working income. The challenge is that their income doesn't stretch to meet their basic needs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My wife and I make a monthly contribution to Loaves and Fishes. How many people do that? And talk to me about that program a little.
Well, you know, we rely very heavily on the support from this community. And so whether it's dollar donations, and yours is very much appreciated, and we have a number of donors who give monthly. We also have folks who are giving less frequently. Every once in a while, we'll get two checks in the same month from the family. But that's a really, really important way in which we're supported. We have one federally funded program. Most of our dollars are raised here in this local community and from individuals like you and your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, we've got 450-500 volunteers who are engaged on a weekly basis in order to make this thing work. And we've got volunteers in the call center who are taking those telephone calls. We've got ones who are in the warehouse getting food ready to actually get out to the distribution sites. Mm-hmm. And then we've got all those great distribution partners. So volunteer time also is essential to our mix. And then the third thing that's really important are food collections. And Borges Hospital just finished their probably 20th Michigan Harvest Gathering event, which brings together that hospital employee community and says, we want to support the hungry folks in our community. We know there are health connections to that. And they raised more than $6,000, and they brought in more than 600 pounds of food. That's great. Mm-hmm. And that kind of support really makes a difference. I think what we'll see is that community support continues to be strong, but we're going to have to pinch pennies even tighter moving forward to help our friends and neighbors meet that basic food need.
Yeah, yeah. These are not easy times, and if the more draconian cuts being bantied about in the House of Representatives happen, this could go from being ugly to being a complete disaster.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
I would agree with you. It's a very scary piece. And I think that the critical thing that Lisa shared today is that should those cuts happen, we're talking about more than the total amount of charitable meals that Feeding America supports nationwide being cut. We can't step up to that kind of challenge.
Right.
You know?
There's
we just can't.
You can only stretch something so far.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Thanks, Ann. Appreciate your taking time out of your busy day to talk with us. If people would like to learn more how they might help Loaves and Fishes, how would they do that?
Our website is great. It's www.kzoolf.org, or give us a call on our administrative line. It's 269-488-2617.
Thanks, Ann. You have a good afternoon.
You too. Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
590 WKZO time is 358. 43 degrees. We've lost one someplace. CBS News follows a local news update. The WKZO.com AccuWeather forecast. Brisk and chilly this afternoon. Some clouds and sun. Rain or snow shower possible, but the odds are decreasing, according to Bob Larson. Clouds and cold the rest of the night, 32 the low, sun and clouds, but still chilly tomorrow, a high 46. Saturday, partly sunny, breezy and milder, with a high of 55. Again, 43 degrees in Kalamazoo. We're going to go batty right after CBS News at the top of the hour. 43 degrees.
The trifecta continues after CBS News and Kalamazoo's news from the WKZO.com newsroom on 590 WKZO Kalamazoo.